So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 2, Verse 8. It's a slightly different verse than we would normally have. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Pranisanamridam dristva. Namrisha tatanavritaha. Uvachavamam chakshurbhyam. Abhiviksha dahaniva. Prak. Before. Nishanam. Being seated. Mridam. Lord Shiva. Drishtva. Seeing. Na amrishat. Did not tolerate. Tat. By him, Shiva. Anadritaha, not being respected. Uvacha, said. Vamam, dishonest. Chakshubhyam, with both eyes. Abhiviksha, looking at. Dahan, burning. Eva, as if. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Before taking his seat, however, Daksha was very much offended to see Lord Shiva sitting and not showing him any respect. At that time, Daksha became greatly angry, and his eyes glowing, he began to speak very strongly against Lord Shiva. Purport. Lord Shiva, being the son-in-law of Daksha, was expected to show his father-in-law respect by standing with the others. But because Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are the principal demigods, their positions are greater than Daksha's. Daksha, however, could not tolerate this, and he took it as an insult by his son-in-law. Previously also, he was not very much satisfied with Lord Shiva, for Shiva looked very poor and was niggardly in dress. Omagyanati Vinandasya Girangina Salakaya Shakshura Militamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pacharine Nivesesa Sunyavari Paskachare Shatarine. So this is one of the famous arguments from Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam has many, many arguments. So today's lecture will be about arguments and how to solve arguments. This is one argument which was run its course, and it was had quite an interesting result in the end. So Daksha was very dissatisfied with Lord Shiva. They had a long-lasting problem already. He actually didn't want to give sati to Shiva. He wasn't very happy with him, and he actually expected more for her, but this is what he had. And so this has been going for a long time, and this has been eating him all the time, so this was a good reason for him. Lord Shiva wasn't standing up, and he used it to really curse him. And so he cursed Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva, being humble as he is, actually didn't react. However, Lord Shiva's followers, namely Nandishwara, he did not tolerate it, and he in turn counter-cursed Daksha, and everybody who just sat there, because everybody heard Daksha curse Lord Shiva, and they didn't do anything. They didn't defend Lord Shiva, they just sat there very humbly listening to Daksha. So he cursed cursed Daksha and all his followers who were just listening there, that they would be bereft of all transcendental knowledge, that they would be just be attracted to fruitive activities. And Bhrigu Muni, who was Daksha's side, he was doing the sacrifice. He in turn again cursed all the followers of Lord Shiva that they would become atheists, and they would be, because they were cursing Lord Daksha and all the Brahmins. And this went on, counter-cursing and counter-cursing. Lord Shiva in the meantime had enough of it, and he packed his bags and he left. Very humbly, didn't want to have anything to do with it, as a great Vaishnava should. And so this was the end of that sacrifice. And then later, during another sacrifice, Sati, who was very attached to her family, wanted to go and visit, and Lord Shiva told her, don't go, you're not going to be happy there. And he tried to warn her, but being attached to her mother and sisters and, you know, all the ladies going there nicely dressed, she also wanted to dress up. And so she went, and she found that even though she was greeted by her mother and her sisters, her father completely ignored her. And on top of it, she found that there was no sacrifice for Lord Shiva. There was no place for him. There was nothing prepared for him. So she became incredibly angry, and she wanted to have nothing to do with the body that was given to her by her father. So she burnt up her body, died then and there in the sacrifice. And from that moment onward, it was full on war. The followers of Lord Shiva started to fight, and Bhrigu and the Brahmanas managed to chase them off, and then even Lord Shiva became angry, and he created this huge demon, Virabhadra, who ended up cutting off Daksha's head. So this is an argument not resolved. And there's quite a few of them in the Bhagavatam. Yes. Kanchana Bali will tell us about another argument, which was resolved in the end.
So there's another example in the Srimad Bhagavatam of a dispute, or I don't know if it's called a dispute, but it was a difficulty in a relationship, and that's between Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. Probably most devotees know the story. Ambarish Maharaj was doing a fast, and Durvasa Muni came towards the end of the fast, and should I tell the story? It's complicated, but anyway, disputes are complicated. So Durvasa Muni went off to bathe, and Ambarish Maharaj was put in a difficulty because there was a time to break the fast, like we on our calendar we have times for breaking fast. So he was coming to the end of the time for breaking fast, and he was getting worried because if he didn't break the fast, then he would get in trouble. But then he had this guest, Durvasa Muni, who he'd invited for prasad, and if he ate before his guest, then he'd get in trouble. So then he had this conflict in himself of what to do. So should he break fast or not break fast? So he asked the Brahmins what to do. And the Brahmins said, well, if you drink water, it's breaking fast and it's not breaking fast. So you can finish your vrata, your vow, and at the same time it's not an offense. You're not going to get in trouble with your guest for doing that. However, Durvasa Muni didn't take it like that. He came back and he realized what happened and got upset. And he made a demon. Am I getting this right? He made a demon to kill Ambarish Maharaj, who's a great devotee. So it's a little bit like when Indra tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. So Durvasa Muni did the same thing, but Krishna knew. Ambarish Maharaj didn't react. He didn't do anything. He was very humble. So it's a nice example of humility. But Krishna didn't take it like that. So he invoked his Sudarshan Chakra, killed the demon, and then the Sudarshan went after Durvasa. Anyway, to cut a long story short, Durvasa went through all the higher planets. He went to Shiva, he went to Brahma, he even went to Vishnu, and everyone said, sorry, we can't help you. Vishnu gave him some advice. So this is, he gave him some advice. He said, the only way, I can't even revoke my Sudarshan, which is interesting. But he said, if you go back to Ambarish Maharaj and apologize, then everything, you'll be fine, then that's okay. So Durvasa Muni did that, and he was saved. Ambarish Maharaj said, you know, I don't feel offended, don't worry about it. And Durvasa Muni went on his way. So this is an example of a difficult situation between two great souls. Durvasa Muni is a very great soul. He's an incarnation of Shiva also, and a wonderful personality, but he has this, he's easily pleased and he's easily angered. He has this quality of Shiva. But even despite all the difficulty, it was still a successful resolution. One interesting point from this, which we'll get onto, is that Vishnu didn't solve the problem for him, but he gave him some good advice, and the advice worked, and so that was, it's an example of a successful intervention in conflict. They say everything's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and if we look, we can find it there. So today what we're going to do is give a presentation of a conflict resolution process that's in place in ISKCON. And what our part is in that, we're trying to do something to help with that. And that's it. I'll just hand over back to Bhagavati.
So so in ISKCON we have an institution which is called ISKCON Resolve. It's called ISKCON Resolve. ISKCON Resolve has been created by the GBC in 2002. And the reason why this was done was because the question was asked of the different GBCs how much time they were spending on solving problems and conflicts in their zone. And practically all of them spent at least 50% of their time solving problems. Some of them a lot more. Other people's problems, yes. Not their own, other people's problems. So this is kind of, this is not very useful time spending of our GBCs. So therefore ISKCON Resolve was created, and they started out with mediation, and recent years they have started out with a new service called Ombudsman. And what an Ombudsman does actually, it's an Ombudsman helps people help themselves. So an Ombudsman will not solve people's problems. You cannot go to an Ombudsman and hand your problem and then it will magically be solved. Ombudsman help people to solve their own problems and by offering them options, showing them the consequences of the different options, making them see what actually are their real, you know, what they actually want, helping them figure that one out. But ultimately the devotees themselves are involved in solving the problem.
Okay, so there's some principle by which ombudsmen work. By the way, myself and Bhagavati are ombudsmen for ISKCON Resolve, so we have we're actually trying to drum up some business. So this is actually a sales pitch. So we're trying to get some business here. Although not by creating problems, we don't want to create any problems, but if you have any problems, we can maybe help a little bit. So there are four principles by which ombudsmen work in general. By the way, this is a very common thing in regular society. People have their own organizations, other organizations have their own ombudsmen. MIT has their own ombudsman. It's a big university in America. In fact, probably all the big American universities will have them. So we're kind of catching up with that, to have people who are designated within an organization to help deal with problems. So the first, there's these four, confidentiality, impartiality, independent, and informal. So I'll just explain these a little bit. Confidential means that if you tell us or an ombudsman anything, we don't tell anybody else. That's very important in a community when we all live together. Everybody knows each other. So So this is the one of the prime principles of Ombud's work. And in this regard, we don't even keep notes. So that, you know, if one of us dies or somebody gets hold of our computer or something like that, everything's deleted. We don't keep anything. We might keep it for for myself, at least until I might keep some notes while the thing's still current, but as soon as it's finished, we get rid of the notes. And we keep statistics, the kinds of conflicts or where the conflicts are. But that's it. We don't keep any names. We don't keep any details. So that's confidentiality. The second one is impartiality. Impartiality means we're not an advocate for anybody. Which means that if somebody comes to us with their problem, we're not presenting that problem to the person and trying to, like a lawyer does. We're not fighting on behalf of anybody. We're an impartial person who's helping discuss or mediate between two people or more than two people. So impartiality. By the way, if anyone has any questions, as we go along, you can raise your hand. Otherwise, we'll ask for questions at the end. Independence. This is a little bit tricky, but we'll try and manage as best we can. Independent means that we're, as in the role of ombudsman, we're not bound by any institutional or managerial roles. It's a little difficult in ISKCON because we're a small organization. So both myself and Bhagavati are actually managers in Radhadesh, but as far as ombuds work is concerned, it's nothing to do with our department or our own needs or wants or like that. So we're for ombuds work, then we're independent. We don't have anything to do with the management structure. It's a little like wearing different hats. I have several different hats that I wear, so. Friend and different hats. Anyways, okay, so the next one is independent. Oh no, excuse me. The next one is informal. Informal, again, means that we don't... this is in some ways a little legal as well. In regular organizations, if you have a dispute with the organization and you tell the organization, that's a formal complaint. And that will... that's a legal notice, even. Which means that so if someone complains to the organization and says there's a big hole in the road outside, and if you don't fix it, someone may get hurt. If in 6 months someone falls into the hole and gets in, you know, hurts themselves, and then they're taken, the organization is taken to court, then you can say, well, you were told 6 months ago about that hole and you haven't done anything. So it's negligent. So you can be prosecuted and pay big fines and stuff like that to the person. Telling an ombud something doesn't put the organization on notice. We're an informal process. Although we are ombuds for ISKCON, we're not ombuds for somebody else. We only deal with things within ISKCON, and ISKCON organized the ombuds service. They're actually ombuds men in. How many are there now? Maybe 20 or something like that? About 15. So we have 15 ombuds persons. Some of them are in America, some of them are in Europe, and some of them are in India, I think. I don't know if we have any anywhere else. So at the minute, a lot of ombuds things will be done by the internet, by email or phone calls. We're kind of in a special situation here. We have two ombuds people who are in Radhadesh. So this is actually an international service. It's not just for Radhadesh. We can deal with things here. If someone finds it difficult to talk to either myself or Bhagavati, then there's other ombuds people available. So you can contact the ombuds office and they'll suggest somebody else. We have someone in England. Actually, we have two people in England. We have one in Croatia. Croatia. Like that. So
what does an ombuds do? Actually, in the first place, an ombuds will offer people options. It's Sometimes when we have a problem, then we can only think of one solution. And we have this kind of tunnel vision, and you know, there's only one way out that we can think of. And that is often the way out that we don't like, or that is unfeasible, or whatever is the problem with it. So an ombudsman can offer people more options. It can broaden our vision. And because an ombudsman has access to different parts of ISKCON where we probably might even don't know that they exist, or they can offer us options that we don't know we have, it will help us kind of think of the most appropriate option. For instance, like a few of the things that that can be offered, well, the one that we've had for some time already is mediation. There's quite a few mediators even here in Radadesh. So mediation can be one of the options. An ombudsman can do that him or herself, or can point it in the direction of another mediator. If mediation is a little bit scary, you don't really feel like being opposite the person that has offended you or that has done something to you, then shuttle diplomacy is an option where an ombudsman can go back and forth between two people and kind of convey messages and kind of try and create a situation in which maybe further mediation or a personal talk is a possibility. Or when there's a bigger dispute and there's a bigger problem, or where somebody has doubts about the behavior of someone, then an informal investigation can be done, and an ombudsman can kind of talk with different people and kind of see, you know, if there's something there, if something can be done. This is informal. As Skanch Navali mentioned, we are not a formal institution. So it's not that we can have a formal investigation and we can write everything down and we can come with an official complaint for management or whatever. It remains informal. Otherwise we get something like arbitration, which is a lot more formal. And an ombudsman is not meant for that. Yes?
Yes.
That might be the law of the land, the law of the organization, I'm not sure. But what's your obligation
on those people? Yes. Shishu Radha Gopinath Ki, Jai Shishu Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki. Thank you. It's a good question. That is about confidentiality. So if somebody tells you something, can you tell somebody? We have to, we're following the American model. So, I'm sorry, yeah, I know. Anyway, maybe it was English originally, I don't know. But we're following the American model, and there are two things that an ombudsperson, ombudsman anyway, the person, men, yes, ombudsman, that's correct. The confidentiality doesn't cover. One is imminent risk of serious harm to oneself or to others. So somebody tells you something, I'm going to jump off the building if I don't get this resolved, and they really mean it. Or I'm going to go and kill them, or you know, set fire to the building, or something like that. So like something serious. So that's one. The other thing is child abuse. If someone's been abusing children, they don't get any breaks with that. We immediately go to the police. Other things, it's confidential. People, because if it's not confidential, people won't feel comfortable to come and talk to us. So it's similar to like therapists or people like that.
Well, in there is obviously, I mean, if somebody comes with something, it depends on if the person allows us to break the. It's something that you discuss with the person. You know, you tell somebody the options, and you know, there is cases where a person just doesn't want their name known, they don't want people to know that they're complaining about them or that there's, so yes, then there's nothing you can do. I mean, if a person is okay with you telling it, then obviously you can, but it depends on the person who comes to you.
So when we're talking with somebody, we'll make notes and we'll write, or if you've got a good memory, you can remember it. And they said, well, is there anything here that you don't want me to tell this other person? And then we make a note of that, and then, yeah, it's good. Rudra Chaitanya Prabhu.
Yeah, I would say something.
Okay.
So, and when you say just informed investigation, does good judgment depend on good investigation? So, if you say informed investigation, it sounds a little bit like half-half.
Yes.
But a half-half can be worse than not.
Well, in this case, because the thing is everything that, because investigation means a judgment, but we don't play that role. That's not our job. Investigation is to try and find out information, what's happening, or because someone may have an idea. Are there any good examples of this? Someone may think somebody's doing something wrong, right? Or doing something they shouldn't be doing. So an ombudsperson may go and check it out. Well, is that person really doing that? They may do a little bit of, talking to people and dropping by. And they may find actually, no, they're not doing anything. For example, bookkeeping. The person is managing to balance the accounts. Somebody's complaining, they think the person's not doing a good job. So we might go and check that out. Are they doing a good job? And if they are, then we could bring that back. Is that a good example?
Well, the investigation in principle remains the same. The informal part does not mean that the investigation is half-half, that's just a bit, but the informal part means that there is no formal consequences to the investigation. So yes, in one of the examples, you can say, somebody can have an idea that somebody is doing something wrong, they can think that the manager is embezzling money. Okay, so you might you look into that, you kind of informally talk with some people, try and find out what you can find out, without kind of creating a big, hoo-ha about it. And then afterwards you come back to the person, you can say, okay, yeah, to my opinion you have, you might be right there, so what do you want to do? And then it's up to the person to decide whether he wants to go, for instance, to the GBC, or he just wants to go to the manager and talk about it with him. Or he might decide that, at the last moment, that actually, no, leave it. But it's something that, so the investigation, the informal doesn't mean haphazard. It just means that we cannot set into motion any procedures on the basis of that investigation. So, ISKCON is, for instance, now it wants to get into arbitration. They want to get arbitrators as well as, we have the ombuds services, they also want to get arbitration. So at a certain point, if you see some improprieties are taking place, you can advise a person, go to the arbitration committee, go to them. And then it gets taken over by them. And then they might volunteer further official, formal investigation.
The thing about this, though, is that confidentiality applies to everybody. So if the ombudsperson is, somebody says something that they have a problem with, and the ombudsperson goes and checks it out, then anything anybody else tells us is also confidential. Right? That makes sense? So it works for, it's not just the person, we're not just confidential the person who comes to complain about it, we're confidential for the person who tells us what's happening. So in saying, if somebody has, we'll keep with the bookkeeping because maybe it's neutral, but or not, but say somebody, has a problem with that and we go and check it out and maybe there is something, but we can't say anybody told us. Redaiti Tanya told me, yes, actually there is a problem, you can't do that. So how we pass on information or make suggestions or help the person understand what's happening will be very indirect. With the print, because you don't want, it would be very, personally it would be very uncomfortable for me and probably for Bhagavati if people in the community thought we were sneaking around trying to find out things so that we can go and report back to the people, our clients, right? I mean, that might be a question, right? Are they talking to me because they're my friend and they're interested, or are they talking to me because they're trying to find something out? So I'm not doing that. Sorry, that's not my job. It's like in the community, we know each other, we find things out, and so confidentiality bites both ways. So we're not. It's not a process of snooping or telling on somebody else or anything like that.
I don't know if that makes sense, if anybody has any questions about that. Is that clear?
Does that confidentiality apply to your clients? That's the right word.
We call them visitors. Yes. Yes.
So they can't
We wouldn't tell them that someone's breaking the law. It's confidential. So we might say, yeah, like Bhagavati said, that someone says, oh, do you think something's happening in the bookkeeping? We'll go and check it out, you know, somebody's just stolen 100,000 euros. So what we do is we might come back and say, you know, that there might be something in that. You know, I'm not sure, but I have a feeling that it might be worth going a little bit further with that and checking it out. So, you know, what the person told us, we don't tell, right? But if they want to go, and if they want to make it a formal investigation, then they have to go to somebody else. And then, because then you get into witnesses, you get into legal stuff. I mean, if it is really illegal, then you have to go to the police. Then it goes to court, and we have lawyers and all that stuff. So. We're in the community, we're in the organization, so. But we all talk to each other all the time, right? Somebody says, oh, this is happening, or did you hear about such and such? And, you know, we're concerned. I mean, in the community, people are concerned about each other. Is everyone okay? Did something happen? And everybody does, these are things we all do all the time, but this is a formalization of that discussion. Oh, anything else on that? Amarish, sorry. An ombudsperson may be a mediator themselves, or they may know somebody who's a mediator. So they can, ombudsmen are more like traffic wardens. And they have their own skills, but they also may say, if there's a child protection issue, and they may say, okay, this is the child protection team, go and talk to them. If it's something to do, like we have the women's ministry, you say, oh, it's a domestic violence issue, so you could go and talk to them, or maybe go and we should phone the police. Or, you know, so we say, okay, go over there, that would be good. Because not everyone knows what's going on or how to deal. I mean, a lot of people are here in a foreign country, so this isn't their own country. They may not know what they can do. Good. Okay, so there are other other things that ombuds people do. One of them is just listening, actually, which can be, it's just for the ladies. No, it's also for the men. Sometimes listening to someone just really helps diffuse the problem, because somebody, if they feel that they're not heard, if they're not understood, they may drive them crazy. So we spend time listening and, you know, understanding the problem. And, like I said, information, giving information about things. If someone doesn't know how something works or how the community works, we might, you know, give them some information about that. There's also conflict analysis, which is, Braj Bihari gave us a very good example. It was quite a complicated, I won't go into the details, but there was a complicated case somewhere in ISKCON. Let's practice confidentiality. And there were like, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 people involved. And so Braj Bihari went in and talked to all the different people and found out. And so, you know, this one doesn't like this one, isn't a friend of this one, and the, you know, these are the different issues, and these are the things that people, and he had this whole, like, diagram. So he can do that, that's quite fun. You need a big piece of paper sometimes to get that all down. And also, the last one is feedback. That sometimes there's a general issue in a community. It's not one person's personal problem, but they have a problem with it, but everybody else does, or, you know, many other people may do too. So if there's a theme that we hear about, something's going on, like could be health and safety. You know, if there's, sometimes we have, Radhadesh, we're always doing building, so there may be a big hole somewhere which is dangerous, or prasadam also. Sometimes that's a hot topic. It's the thing I hear most about is prasadam.
But there's other things as well. Everybody eats, everybody walks around. So there may be common things that people are worried about, and then we can act as a barometer. No, barometers or thermometers, the temperature of something, what's going on. There's going to be a revolution, you better do something. anyway, like that.
Just a little bit more on the feedback. It is like Kanchanavali was saying that an ombudsman doesn't take, well, they take notes and then they get rid of them. What they do keep is like little notes on demographics. Are the most of the problems coming from senior devotees, from junior devotees? Are they mostly coming from the men? Are they mostly coming from the females? Are they, you know, what type of problem is most common? So that he could track of that. So then after some time you have like an overview of, you know, I mean, we've noticed that, you know, it's mainly Aupa disciples which are dissatisfied with a certain thing, or it's mainly, you know, people, grihasthas, who have a problem with a certain thing. So then it's easier for management to address a certain problem.
Any questions on that? Okay, so how about
you? Okay. All right. Oh my goodness, time. Okay, hopefully there's some benefits from all this, what we're going to achieve. One thing is that things can be dealt with discreetly. It doesn't have to become a community problem. You know, one person has a problem with another person. It can be dealt with just with them. We don't have to have a whole discussion about it. It simplifies the process, not having to go through a lot of stages. You can just go to one person and they can help you. I think especially for the, like Bhagavati mentioned at the beginning, a lot of times when people have a problem with somebody else, they go to one of our managers, whether it's a local temple president or a GBC or the GBC body or their guru. And I think very senior devotees would really appreciate if they didn't have to hear everybody's problems, and because they're, you know, often very, very busy people. It's also quite stressful. Listening to problems, you can get traumatized just to listening to other people's problems. So you can talk to us instead. It can limit things, limit problems in the sense that they don't get out of hand. If things are dealt with quickly, it's usually helpful rather than letting something rumble on for years. Again, there's trends, things that are generally happening, and it can help reduce what we call prajalpa, or gossip is a more common word. Often people gossip because they're worried about something. They think, oh, there's a problem. If the problem goes away, then they stop talking about it. So it can help reduce anxiety levels as well, which is very nice.
And then the last thing, it uses triangling. Triangling is a beautiful word. And I want to make that a little bit more visible. So we're going to have a little activity here. I need some volunteers. Could you come forward, please? So, yeah, you can stand here, like next to me. So Mahalakshmi has a problem with whom will she have a problem?
This is an example.
No, she doesn't really have a problem. She's the last person to have a problem with anyone. That's why I can pick her. She has a problem with... do you come forward, please? She has a problem with... Right. You're having an argument. Those two are having an argument. They don't like each other anymore. She said something wrong, and he said something wrong back, and it's a big argument. And what does she do? She goes to... Yes. She goes to tell her friends. They do a little bit of prajalpa, a little bit of gossiping, and she tells her about it. You can stand here then. And Ras Mandla, yeah, well, he also tells somebody. He's going to tell Mahabala. So now Mahabala, he also has a problem with Mahalakshmi. And Manukanya, she has a problem with Mahabala and with Rasmandala. They are, you can stand a little bit more here, face them. So they also have a problem. And then, I mean, she's so worked up about it. So she's going to tell somebody else. She's also going to tell somebody. And Mahabala, I mean, you know, I know Mahabala doesn't like gossiping, but still, you know, this one is too big for him. So he's also going to tell, he's going to tell Mark. And now, Mark doesn't like them, and she doesn't like them, and they're arguing with each other, and, you know, when you see them in the prasadam line, they're kind of, there's those looks going around, and they don't want to sit near each other, and they don't, you know, there's some service going on, they do some service in the kitchen together, but they can't do any service anymore together. And before you know it, the whole temple is involved in this. You know, there's two groups here now, but that can split, this can split a temple completely in the middle, and this is called triangling. Now, Mahabala, Mark, and you can sit down. No, you can sit at your spot, yeah. So now if Ma Lakshmi would have gone to Manukanya and told her about it, and Manukanya would have said, go talk with him. Go discuss it with him. You know, go. And she would have, you know, helped them. You know, maybe I can help you. I can help you sort this. Then this would have stayed there. And that is basically what an ombudsman can help you with. So this is one of the greatest advantages in a big community like Radhadesh, that it can stay like this. You know, this is a healthy triangle. This is where the third person comes and kind of helps people solve the problem, instead of having like the whole temple involved and quality of prasadam going down and everybody kind of upset. And so, thank you.
Thank you. The other thing that's a benefit is that more problems surface. If you stir something up, then things come up. So instead of things festering, or festering is a big word, instead of things sitting around and getting worse in people's minds and hearts, and sometimes we have devotees leave, if they can be dealt with quickly or and efficiently, that can be very helpful. Good. So, just to finish off, I'm sure everyone's hungry. We thought we'd just do this little diagram of approaches to handling a conflict. So in the first, first three, okay, so we have different extremes. So the first, one extreme is avoiding a problem. This is actually an English habit. I believe other countries also have this habit. Avoiding things, so they go around it. Every time you see the person, you walk the other way. So this is one extreme. Another extreme is actually going and attacking the person. So these are extreme ways of dealing with or approaching a problem. Up until here, this line here, is a very nice diagram. It's beautifully drawn. Up until here is things that ombuds people will deal with, or the level that they work on. So negotiation, conciliation, and mediation. So this is about discussion. It's about going to the people who are involved. Ombuds is very much about win-win. Probably a lot of people know what that is by now. Win-win means that both people are happy with the result, right? So you can have win-lose, where you have the person who comes to the ombudsperson gets what they want and the other person is dissatisfied. Lose-win is where the person with the conflict doesn't get what they want and the other person is happy. So one of the things we try to go for is win-win, where both parties are satisfied, or at least as satisfied as possible. There was a case where one devotee said, if I don't get what I want, I'm going to sue the temple. So okay, it was in America, so it's possible. Maybe here they wouldn't do it. And so the temple said, whoa, you know, that's, we don't need, just going to court is expensive. Right? You just the fact that you go to court, you have to get a lawyer, it costs thousands of euros just to turn up or to speak of if there's a judgment against you. So the temple said, we don't need that. It was about facilities, the person needed a bathroom or something. So it was about facilities, and they said, you know, if you give me this, then I'll just forget about it. So the temple was like, that's fine, it was a few hundred euros or something like that, no problem. And so instead of getting sued, they could just give the person a little bit of some Lakshmi to solve the particular problem, and then Haribo. So that's the case of ombuds. They wouldn't go further than that. Bhagavati is going to talk about the other stages.
There's not that much to say about the other ones, but yes. So once you reach past this line and you get into arbitration, which is, as I explained, something that ISKCON will most likely be able to do shortly as well. And then litigation or legislation, which is somewhere where we really, really don't want to go to as devotees. At this point, there is definitely only a win-lose solution. One of the parties will lose. There is no way anymore of creating a win-win. And that is one of the reasons why ombudsmen are important for everybody, because it's the only... By working with an ombudsman, both parties have a chance of winning. And obviously we always think that we were going to an argument that we were the one who's right and that we're the one who's going to win. But just kind of, you know, consider what would happen if you wouldn't win. You know, they call that a watna, the worst... a worst alternative to a negotiated agreement. What would happen if I do not... It doesn't work out my way. And so if we think about that, then it's better to stay on this side of the line and not get into the rest where, the one is somebody is going to lose. It's not a very happy ending most of the time. And besides, that relationship will get damaged irreparably when you get there. And obviously, you know, once we get to that end, there's a lose-lose situation. If you get to a point when there is violence, where things go completely out of hand, then nobody wins anymore. Everybody is a loser. Not only the parties, but, I mean, the whole community ends up being a loser because of something like that. So, are there any more questions? Yes, Maharaj. Of an ombudsman? No. That would be nice. Temple doesn't have to pay me anymore. I'll do a sideline service. the ombudsman is for free. And especially for the local people, when they deal with us, that is for free.
Especially free.
Yes, especially free. Obviously, when an ombudsman has to deal with a problem in another country, most of the time we do things via mail, via phone, via Skype. So then there's no cost involved. Long live Skype. But as soon as there's a travel, then yes, somebody was going to have to pay for the travel because we can't afford it ourselves. But most of the things are free of charge. Yes? Any other questions? Ladies? Very quiet. Yes. Arbitration is where it's a formal way of intervening in an argument. So it's like somebody who listens to the arguments of both sides, who thinks about it, and that person makes a decision. Neither side has a say in the decision. They bring forward their arguments, and an arbitrator says, you're right, you're wrong, you're getting your way, you're not getting your way, and that's it. And there's no, you can't argue with that. That's it. That's arbitration. Yes? You wouldn't approach an ombudsman. Well, in principle, an ombudsman deals with any issues, an ISKCON ombudsman deals with any issues which... where a person has a problem which kind of has an influence on their surface, on their well-being in Krishna consciousness. It has to be related to ISKCON. I mean, somebody having a dispute with their boss outside is not really something that we can deal with. I mean, at some point in time, we might be able to offer somebody some advice, but in principle, it is not something that we can deal with. So it has to be something to do with, you know, it has to be something to do with ISKCON. If you have your boss is an ISKCON devotee, yes. If you're renting an apartment from an ISKCON devotee and there's an argument there, yes. If you're renting an apartment outside, no. But it has something to do with inside ISKCON. Interpersonal things, doubts. As I said, it doesn't always have to mean argument. It can also be, us being very dissatisfied in a situation. It can be a doubt that we have about a certain person where we kind of, doubt that, there might be some wrongdoings there. It's, there's different situations. But it normally relates to ISKCON. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Yeah.
That's good to say. So arbitration is legally binding. I think it can be both. It depends on which arbitrator you go to. But like Hriday Chaitanya said, that it's if at the minute ISKCON doesn't have an official arbitration system. But if they did, that's what we do. They'd have to sign a paper saying, otherwise there's no point. There's no point going to an arbitrator. Otherwise then it's just a discussion. So they sign off. They say, whatever you decide, I agree to. So.
Also, like the mediation that ISKCON does, even though it is not legally binding strictly, it is found that because the conclusions of the mediation get normally written down, and in a way that both people agree about it. And I've recently heard that in a conference call that about 75% or more. Of the cases, both parties will actually voluntarily stick to those agreements, which is quite high. It's actually higher than it is outside. Because devotees, as devotees, we like to solve problems with other devotees.
In ISKCON,
yes. It's 75 or even higher. I forgot the number, but it's a very high number, a very high percentage where both parties voluntarily stick to an agreement made through mediation. So in that case, if that is the case, then hopefully there's not much arbitration needed. Anything else? No? Okay, well, thank you very much for your time and attention.
Yeah, we should give some, yes. ISKCONresolve.com. If anyone has a problem, they would like to have resolved. If you can come to either myself or Bhagavati, if you prefer not to do that. And this is also going to be published on the internet probably, so you can go to ISKCONresolve.com. And there's a list of them on there.
ISKCONresolve was originally created by Braj Bihari Prabhu and Brahmatirtha, I think those were the main people behind ISKCON Resolve. Brahmatirtha is the person in Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, Bob Cohen, the person who spoke with Srila Prabhupada. So they have a lot of experience. Braj Bihari Prabhu, he studied conflict resolution specifically for ISKCON, because he was already devotee when he was found, when he was starting ISKCON Resolve, he actually studied conflict resolution specifically for that purpose. And also, besides the website, there's a PAMHO address. I think it's either isconresolve@pamho.net or resolve@pamho.net. And then you end up with me because I'm the secretary of ISKCON Resolve. So if people don't like coming to us, then you know you can also come directly to me and I can kind of make sure that there's another person that you can go to. Sorry? I don't remember because she was the secretary, but I've taken over from her. So I don't remember if she's an ombudsperson or a mediator. I can't remember that. Madhavi Shaka is the proper disciple in America. She is an ombudsperson. So you can, if you have a big conflict, you can invite her and she'll have to come here.
Oh, and we'll be putting up a piece of paper with information on it on notice boards in a temple near you. It's a joke. Anyway, okay, thank you very much for your attention. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.